Good evening, New York. Thank you for tuning in into The Rundown on WNYU 89.1 FM here in New York City and online everywhere at WNYU.org. I'm your host, Aria Young, and today we have five stories prepared for you. First, we will hear from Amaya McDuffie about two new labor bills that might protect service workers in New York. Then we'll hear from M. Ingram about the violence that recently happened at Elsewhere, a popular music venue in Brooklyn. After that, we have a story from Ava Sapsaris about the DNA nanotechnology developments at NYU. Then in culture news, we'll hear from Bridget Rudolph about a new stage play in New York City called Peerless. And finally, you'll hear from Tara Kanuja and me, myself, about the New York Coffee Festival that took place this past weekend. And of course, don't forget to stay tuned with us till the end to find out what happened today in history. So without further ado, let's dive right into the news. So our first story today is a political news story. Two groundbreaking labor bills are currently making their way through the New York City Council. If passed, the bills will aim to protect fast food chain workers in New York City. Amaya McDuffie has the story.
That's the sound of a rally this past August, attended by New York City Council members, Chipotle employees, and 32BJ, the local branch of the Service Employees International Union. They gathered to mark the introduction of two new groundbreaking labor bills, sponsored by City Council members Marjorie Velasquez and Carmen De La Rosa. Here's New York Mayor Eric Adams at a press conference following the settlement.
And I want to thank 32BJ. They using government correctly, identifying a problem that's dealing with workers, bringing it to the attention of our commissioners, and then acting accordingly to what we discover after a thorough investigation. We obtained a $20 million in relief for our employees. The New York City Department of Consumer and Workers Protection took actions against Chipotle Mexican Grill Company on behalf of our city workers. Under the New York City Fair Work Week law, fast food employees must provide workers with their schedules in advance or pay workers extras. Our investigation determined that that did not happen.
According to 32BJ's Vice President of Security Division, Izzy Melendez, this settlement and the bills that follow set a precedent.
And it's been a week, an incredible week for the Chipotle workers here in the city and the 50 for all fast food workers in New York City. So we out here 2 days later to talk about a package of bills that's going to be able to, that our allies has introduced in the city council that present companies like Chipotle that think that hard-won employee rights do not apply to them.
The first bill introduced at the rally is sponsored by
Councilmember Carmen De La Rosa, and I'm proud to be the City Council's chair on civil service and labor.
If passed, the bill would double the maximum civil penalties for violations of the Fair Work Week law. The bill also states that any employers that, one, have not satisfied a fine or penalty, two, have engaged in a pattern or practice of violations of the Fair Work Week law or the Earned Safe and Sick Time Act, or three, have been ordered to pay $500,000 or more in penalties for violations of these work laws, risk no longer being allowed to operate in New York City. Here's Councilwoman De La Rosa speaking about her bill.
We need one to impose violations and sanctions and penalties that hit them in their pockets.
That's correct.
Because we know how corporations operate. And we're saying with this bill to these companies, if you want to do business in New York City, you have to treat workers with dignity, with respect, with transparency.
The bill would also ensure that employees at closed down fast food restaurants would receive severance pay for 2 weeks. The second bill was introduced by Councilwoman
Marjorie Velasquez, and our black and brown communities are at the height of labor abuse, and we are not going to take it any longer.
Her bill would require the city to provide workers with training on city employment laws, including protections under the Fair Work Week law. According to New York City Council records, both bills have been laid over by committee since September 19th, meaning that the committee to which the bill was assigned postponed voting on the bill until the next legislative day. Regardless of their outcome, the introduction of these groundbreaking labor bills are further proof that we are in the midst of a powerful pro-labor rights cultural shift and should expect more wins for workers to come. I'm Amaya McDuffie. This is The Rundown, and I will continue to follow the progression of these bills through the New York City Council.
New York City is and will always be a union town, and in this city, we treat workers with respect.
Yeah! Yeah!
Yeah. 32!
Thank you, Amaya. That was a fantastic political and also city news story. So our next story is about a fairly popular music venue in Brooklyn. Some of you might be familiar with the nightclub Elsewhere. But did you know that some are encouraging people to dance elsewhere following an incident last week? Pasha Tobe and Emin Graham have the scoop.
On October 4th, following his sixth performance at the trendy Brooklyn-based queer nightclub Elsewhere, artist Pink Sifu took to Instagram with a post detailing an altercation that occurred between him and the venue's security. With WNYU's The Rundown, I'm Em Ingram.
And I'm Pasha Tobe. For the last 4 years, Pink Sifu has been releasing conscious rap albums derived from countless influences, such as underground hip-hop to industrial to freeform jazz. During his fifth or sixth show at Elsewhere, an altercation arose between him and security regarding him smoking in the venue. Sifu explained the situation through a post on Instagram, where he attached multiple images of lacerations and a caption reading, "Security at Elsewhere Space tried to get into a catfight with me last night. I will never perform at Elsewhere again and will need my reparations. After trying to kick out the headliner's wife and two-year-old son, I politely spoke to the supervisor of security to calm down, and he told me to throw away my spliff. He then aggressively continued to take it out of my hand and starts trying to grab and choke and reach at my neck and collar. The result is these scars. Being I've played at this venue 5 to 6 times already, this is beyond disrespectful customer service, with Elsewhere Space already having a history of effing the people over."
Elsewhere has since responded to Sifu's post with the following statement on Instagram. "Hi everyone, as some of you may know, there was an incident at Elsewhere between an artist and a member of our security team on Tuesday, October 4th. We appreciate everyone's patience as we thoroughly investigate the situation and reached out to the artists involved. First and foremost, the safety of our audiences, artists, and staff are essential in creating a safe and fun environment at Elsewhere. While these issues are always complex, we do not condone violence in any form. We fully recognize that we fell short on this night. We have an in-house security team that we staff and train so that such incidences never happen. Our training is focused on empathy, de-escalation, and sensitivity, never aggression, which is when things can get out of hand. When a situation arose that night, unfortunately, the actions that our security team member took failed to de-escalate it and were unacceptable. Because of this, they are no longer employed by Elsewhere. We are actively working to ensure that this will remain an isolated incident, including a thorough review and assessment of our training and protocols, particularly around sensitivity and de-escalation. We extend a deep and sincere apology to everyone who was impacted by what happened, to Pink Sifu, iDress, and all the Lex Record artists and team members, all their family members and all their fans, to our community that comes to Elsewhere as a beacon of progress and positivity. Violence is never the answer. We're trying to work towards reconciliation with Sifu and the artist team members, and to reach a place of understanding and peace. Our number one priority is to be a safe space where everyone can be freely themselves, and we remain committed to upholding that for our artists, fans, and staff. We hope to open the dialogue, and as always, we encourage your feedback on how we can continue to improve." As Pink Sifu mentioned, Elsewhere has a bit of a track record with safety concerns. Sifu's post alludes to a boycott which occurred in 2019 called Dance Elsewhere, which was in response to allegations that one of the club's investors had roofied and sexually assaulted attendees. Elsewhere released a similar statement on social media regarding that incident, along with a few follow-up posts, and made a quote-unquote pledge for safety and reconciliation with the victims, and ensured that the investor had been dropped and never profited off of the venue and would be replaced.
As Elsewhere continues to host large events, including shows with some of Pink Sifu's collaborators such as rapper Rock Marciano and legendary hip-hop producer The Alchemist, the legitimacy of Elsewhere as a safe space is rightfully being called into question.
"It is not necessarily a good sign of reconciliation and progress for there to be multiple incidences reported at this venue, especially when those reports are being made by members of marginalized communities, which Elsewhere claims to create a safe space for. Events are continuing as normal at Elsewhere, and it will be interesting to follow and see if there are any repercussions similar to that of Dance Elsewhere. Will artists drop out because they don't feel safe? Do you feel safe? Do you think that this response and action is good enough? Let us know.
With WNYU's The Rundown, this has been Pasha Tobe.
And I'm Emma Ingram.
And that was Em and Pasha. So our next one is about the DNA research that's been going on at NYU. Reporter Ava Sapsaris gives us a crash course on DNA nanotechnology and recent developments in the field at NYU.
What do you think of when you think of DNA?
I think of genetic material that makes up plants, animals, and humans.
But did you ever wonder what we can do with DNA? To learn more about this, let's talk to Carol at the NYU Structural DNA Nanotechnology Laboratory. You might be wondering, what exactly is DNA nanotechnology?
So in the most technical sense, it would be the design and manufacture of nucleic acids for technological uses. So instead of using it as a biological molecule in terms of genetic storage and information usage, it's essentially used as sort of a construction material.
Carol is a research scientist at NYU's Structural DNA Nanotechnology Laboratory. When we look at DNA as a construction material, new opportunities open up.
You can essentially make various sorts of nanostructures out of DNA that can then be used to diagnose different sorts of illnesses, treat different sorts of illnesses.
DNA nanotechnology has so many emerging and already existing applications, especially in the area of drug delivery.
One of my research interests is drug delivery, wherein you sort of form a DNA cube or DNA box that's locked with some sort of aptamer that will only recognize receptors that are found solely on cancerous cells. And you can load that sort of DNA box with some sort of tumor-killing drug like doxorubicin, then sort of send out that DNA box into the body. It'll target just cancerous tumor cells.
Some very important discoveries are taking place right here at NYU.
Probably the biggest discovery we've had in recent years would be crystallization of DNA in three dimensions.
Three-dimensional DNA structures have many impactful uses to better our world. For example, the arrangement of drug receptor targets to make their 3D structures more visible is possible because of the work that took place at the NYU Structural DNA Nanotechnology Laboratory. And to date, there are more remarkable discoveries taking place.
Since I've been here, probably the biggest discovery would be that there are actually multiple sorts of space groups that DNA can crystallize into, specifically the DNA tensegrity triangle. So originally it was crystallized in an R3 space group. Space groups just refer to how the molecule sorts of repeats itself in space. And we've recently discovered two new space groups that showcase new sorts of ways that DNA can repeat and crystallize, which is quite big.
The discoveries Carol has addressed have made the molecular world more accessible to our physical world. For WNYU 89.1, I'm Ava Sapsaris.
All right, that was a very scientific story. So the next one we have is in culture news. So Bridget Rudolph reviews the new stage play, Peerless. It's a play about the ruthless college application process that puts a modern twist on a Scottish play, for those who know what I'm talking about. So here's the story by Bridget Rudolph.
From WNYU 89.1 FM, I'm Bridget Rudolph. Citizens of New York and students of NYU have numerous shows to pick from, both on and off Broadway, But today, we're going to cover a new stage play opening this October 11th to the public that some NYU students got early tickets to see an exclusive showing of before it releases. Peerless by Jihee Park is a 90-minute modern take on the story of Shakespeare's Macbeth with a dark comedic twist. The plot takes us into the brutal world of elite college admissions. The story centers on M and L, twin Asian American siblings who have given up everything to get admission to the college. When another classmate receives the coveted one spot that they feel is rightfully their spot, the twins decide that murder is the best response. The production plays with lights and shadows to create vivid dream sequences, some of which may be more real than others. In the words written on the play ballot, it's a comedy until it's not. Overall, what did the NYU students who got early tickets think of the show?
I really liked it. I went to it almost completely blind and knew, like, the general premise, but I was not expecting it to go veer as hard into, like, horror as it did. I loved that. I'm a big fan of, like, dark comedy stuff.
I really, really loved Peerless. The lighting cues are really amazing. They make great use of the stage and the set. The actors are just incredible.
I'm gonna be honest, I'm usually not a fan of, like, super modern, like, hip style dialogue, but I think it was done really, really well. I loved the kind of, like, back and forth. I thought it had a really, really unique kind of dialogue style, and it was funny without, like, trying too hard to be funny, and I think that had something to do with how fantastic the performances were. I really liked it. I'm not a big Shakespeare fan, and I thought this was a really, really fun take on Macbeth.
I think Peerless takes on the general plot structure and rise and fall of Macbeth, but in a completely different reimagined way that doesn't feel stale. It feels like a completely new concept, and it's just very well done.
This modern take on Macbeth has certainly captured these showgoers, but this leads to the big question. Would they recommend it?
Absolutely.
I would 100% recommend going to see Peerless. It was just such an incredible theater-going experience. It is so well acted and so well directed, and it just really, really sticks with you.
But also it's really funny and offbeat and scary, so I would absolutely recommend it.
For those interested, Peerless will be running at the 59th East 59th Theater from October 11th to November 6th. Don't miss the show before it leaves theaters. For WNYU 89.1 FM, this has been Bridget Rudolph.
And that was Bridget Rudolph about the new play Peerless. Next up, we have one more story in culture news and our last story. So this past weekend, I went to the New York Coffee Festival with my fellow reporter, Tara. We interviewed the vendors and baristas there. And I also got to talk to their founder, Jeffrey Young, about this event. So Tara Kanuja and I have the story.
Yeah, New York is just another level up in terms of caffeination.
This is Jeffrey Young, CEO and founder of Allegra Group, the company that owns the New York Coffee Festival. Last weekend, October 7th through 9th, vendors, baristas, and coffee lovers gathered at the annual commercial event for a cup of joe. This year, the New York Coffee Festival was hosted in the Metropolitan Pavilion in downtown Manhattan. This year is their first time returning after the two-year hiatus due to the pandemic.
The festival was originated in London and came to New York in 2015. Young says that New York is a highly caffeinated city, even more so than London.
You know, Britain still has its heritage of the little cup of tea. They have, over the last two decades, become much, much more, really enjoying a nice cup of coffee. And we've got some fantastic specialty coffee brands. However, America is just coffee festival? Are you joking? You know, I gotta have this. Like, where is it? When is it? You know, there's just an absolute city runs, you know, on coffee.
The festival presents all things coffee, from coffee cocktails to coffee art. Consumers were encouraged to try out different flavors and products from all around the world. Many local vendors are featured in the festival. Nguyen Coffee is one of them. The owner, Sarah Nguyen, says that this is her company's second time attending the festival. The first time they were here was in 2019, when the company was only 1 year old. Now, Nguyen Coffee has a booth displayed on the main floor.
And like a micro example of our growth as a company, but also like the evolution of the industry, I feel as well, to have more representation for Asian origins of coffee and Asian coffee culture from Asia. So we're very excited and very proud to be here.
Nguyen is a first-generation Vietnamese New Yorker. She says that coffee also represents the hustle and grind of the city.
New York is such a connective city as well. So many people, so many folks here, we connect over coffee because we can walk down the street, we can hop on the train, we need a friend, grab coffee. It's a huge creator economy here, a huge like gig economy here. And I think like having coffee as like a point of connection is like a really big part of coffee culture in New York.
Besides various vendors, the festival also features a latte art competition. Hawkeye Johnson was one of the baristas competing for championships.
This one here, they were judging it based off of your symmetry, your infusion, your color contrast. You're also judged on milk texture, and then you're also judged on a subconscious level, your speed. So whoever puts theirs down first tends to get a speed point.
Johnson has competed in latte art competitions all over the country. He says that the best part of being a barista is the sense of community that he found through coffee.
I know people now all over the world just from coffee. I know people in New Zealand. I know people in Germany. It's all over the fact that you like coffee, I like coffee. Let's talk coffee or let's just go experience together. And it's really, really cool. I think it's one of the nicest communities I've ever worked with as well. And it's really nice.
Although this year's event came to an end, the New York Coffee Festival is looking forward to returning again in 2023. For coffee-loving New Yorkers and businesses, the festival is an opportunity to connect with the world through the iconic drink. For the rundown on 89.1 FM, this has been Aria Young.
And Tara Kanuja.
Yeah, New York is just...
Oops, sorry. That was a autoplay. So that was all for our stories tonight. For a historical fact of the day... if you're still listening. So on this day in 1968, the 19th Summer Olympic Games opened at Mexico City, Mexico. So and it was the first Olympics in Latin America. So go Mexico. And on that note, that's all for the rundown tonight. If you liked what you heard or want to hear something different, or if you want to submit a tip for a story, you can email me at associatenews@wnyu.org. Next up, you will actually hear from me again, in a little bit, for our podcast, What the New York with Ed and Ari. I hope you enjoy the show today. I will be here next Wednesday, 7 p.m., to bring you more local alternative news. I'm Aria Young, and this has been The Rundown on WNYU 89.1 FM.